We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
The feature-length documentary Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency, premiering November 11th, chronicles the life and ministry of Don Wildman. It takes you through the founding of the National Federation for Decency, what has become AFA. It's a call to stand firm for righteousness and shows how that resolve can make a huge difference in our world.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Find out more and watch the trailer at culturewarrior.movie.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And the biggest headline this morning that happened just late last night is that Trump has signed a memo declassifying the Crossfire Hurricane file. So this is just another shot across the bow that Trump is saying, I don't care, I'm taking no prisoners. Or maybe he's saying, I am going to be taking prisoners. We'll see how this turns out. But this is the immediate declassification of all FBI files related to the now infamous Crossfire Hurricane memos, the probe that, of course, led to a lot of drama and a lot of questions about the Clintons, the Steele dossier, a lot of that with his first incoming administration and ultimately the first what should have been, according to the left, impeachment, the Mueller report, all of that. So is this Trump just saying, you know what, I'm not going to wait 75 years and let somebody declassify it down the road. I want to hold people accountable. And he's talking also about saying that he wants to look into Joe Biden's auto pen and potentially say that the pardons are void or voidable. I mean, so I see this as Trump just saying, you know, listen, this is where the rubber meets the road. I don't care about bipartisanship anymore. I want to do what the American people elected me to do. So let's talk to Representative Marlon Stutzman, who joins us now from the great state of Indiana. And Representative Stutzman, you know, I think this is fascinating. What do you think we will learn from the Crossfire Hurricane files?
Well, good morning, Jenna. Great to be with you. And, you know, again, going back to just this is President Trump's style. This is who he is. He is transparent. And, you know, that's one of the things that's so different with a Trump administration versus a Biden administration. I mean, remember that the press couldn't even get interviews or couldn't even get the president to talk to them at the White House or wherever. And now you have President Trump, who's just the opposite, and is constantly talking with the press and is transparent. He's an open book, and it's so refreshing. And I think that's what the American people like. Sometimes, you know, people do, it's like, you want the truth? Here's the truth. And he's giving it to us. And I think it's a smart move to do it now. Like you said, you know, why wait for 75 years? Let's get to the details now and what actually happened. Because after watching what happened in the 2016 presidential race, when, you know, President Trump suggested that there was spying in Trump Tower, everybody's like, oh, you know, that's not actually going on. I mean, you know, who would? Well, then we find out later that was going on. And so let's do it now. And if there's somebody that needs to be held accountable, let's hold people accountable, because why should we wait and let, you know, the time go by where it's pointless anymore? There's a time of accountability, and Trump's doing it, and I love it.
Yeah, accountability is so necessary, I think. And for Trump to do that in real time, not be waiting for so long, is, as the Bible rightly describes, I mean, you know, justice needs to be swift in order to be effective. And for too long, the Democrats have gotten away with, well, let's just wait for another news cycle, and then that will be the dustbin of history. Or as Hillary Clinton herself famously said, well, at this point, what difference does it make, right? That's not accountability, and that's certainly not not how we should hold our elected officials for accountability, but also people who contribute to things like Crossfire Hurricane and like some of these other really, I think, dark moments in America's history, that we want to know the truth and we want to have transparency. And so with Kash Patel and Dan Bongino leading the FBI, Pam Bondi, the DOJ, and then also the investigative powers that the House also has, setting aside the executive and their investigations, with this new revelation, do you anticipate that the House will hold its own inquiries into the Crossfire Hurricane files that will be released?
Yeah, I'm sure the House will act on it because, again, you know, it's shining a light on whatever is the situation is better for all of us to know. You know, like you said, you know, there's plenty of scripture that talks about, you know, shining the light or living in the light is better than darkness. And so the fact that President Trump is willing to release those files is a way for him to say, look, I don't have anything to hide. I mean, nobody should, I mean, if you're not doing anything wrong, then you shouldn't have a problem with files being released. I mean, that's the way we as Christians should, you know, live every day, is that, you know, we behave and we act according to God's word, but we also behave and act like, I tell my boys this, like, you may be running for office someday because you want to be, you want to live above reproach. And I think that's what President Trump is doing, is pushing these files out, and then Congress has the opportunity to investigate and to, whether it's subpoena witnesses or bring those in for testimony to find out what actually happened, because I just got to believe at some point that there's going to be people that have been told to shush, and now that there's a new sheriff in town and that there's a new day in town, that there might be somebody out there that just says, you know what, this is what I actually saw behind the scenes, and it should be exposed to the American people, so that way we can learn a lesson from it.
Absolutely. And I hope that we will see just some measure of justice in all of these things, including, you know, anyone like Dr. Fauci. I think it's reprehensible, quite frankly, that the power of pardon was used for someone like him just to circumvent accountability, because the power of pardon was never intended to circumvent justice. It was to be the last measure of justice when the process failed to enact justice. And so just to allow people to get off on potential crimes or otherwise be held accountable to the American people through our process is just disturbing. And so if there is a valid legal reason, not just because I prefer it or for politics or political reasons, if there is a valid way to say that those pardons are not valid and to hold people like Fauci and others accountable, I think that that's what justice actually requires. But I want to turn, Representative Stutzman, to a meeting that you had last night at the White House with the GOP freshman delegation from Congress. And so you took them to the White House and explained that meeting and that purpose and what unfolded.
Yeah, you know what? It's, of course, always a privilege and an honor to go to the White House. And
yes.
I'm a returning member, so I've been a freshman twice now. So 2010, I came in the big Tea Party wave when President Obama was in office, and then again reelected in 2024 after leaving Congress in 2016. It's just an incredible moment, you know, walking into the White House. And, of course, this time it's even more special having President Trump there and, you know, knowing that there's people there that truly want to live, you know, a life that you know, honors our Constitution and that reflects the American values that we have and the Christian Judeo principles that our country was built on. And so we got to go down and meet with President Trump. He took a little bit of time with each of us. And, you know, I told him, you know, as a returning member who was here before, I was a budget hawk. I've always, you know, fought to, you know, increase our economic activity and grow the economy, but to fight our debt, you know, as Proverbs says, the borrower is the servant to the lender. And so I believe that that's the threat to America is our fiscal situation with debt and deficits. And it was obviously a lot of our first time. It was my first time in the Oval Office. I didn't have the opportunity when President Obama was in office, but that was my first time to be in the Oval Office with President Trump. And talked about our boys. You know, our boys are 23 and 19, and that's one of the reasons I ran for office again, is because of their future and for future generations, but also talked about the economy and how companies or businesses and countries are looking at the United States differently and, like, investing in America. I mean, it's incredible, Jenna, to see the amount of money that's being committed to coming to the United States. It's in the trillions now of growth that's coming to America because of President Trump's leadership. And so I think when, you know, there's an old saying about capital is cowardly. And so it's looking for a safe haven. And so that means people are looking to the United States under Trump's leadership, that they can invest their capital in the United States because it's a trustworthy, safe place to grow. And I think we should all be very proud of that fact. And it's going to create jobs and opportunities for Americans across this country in a way that I think is going to be, you know, very just an incredible time in our period. As President Trump likes to talk about the golden era of America, he's making it happen.
Yeah, and, you know, I love, Representative Stutzman, that you have that awe for who we are as Americans and our system of government and that respect when you go into a place like the White House. I mean, I had the same experience, you know, going into the White House when I've done tours on Capitol Hill. And even, you know, just when I was practicing more in courtrooms, practicing law, every time I would step into a courtroom, I would think, you know, this is a gift from our founders. And it's really an incredible thing to think about our heritage and to link the past to the present and then also where we want to go in the future. And what was the tenor of the other freshman members with you and kind of that moment as well? Because, you know, there's nothing like being in the Oval Office with Donald Trump. I'm actually surprised that you know, you were able to get out in time to make this interview and they didn't hold you over for, you know, 17 hours. So,
it was obviously with freshman classmates. It was their first time as well to be there at the Oval Office. And you know, many of them just kind of that awe of the important decisions that are made right there by the President of the United States. And one of the things about this freshman class, Jenna, is that some of them, you know, come, like me, you know, comes from a strong Republican district, but others come from a swing seat, you know, where Ryan McKenzie or Rob Bresnahan comes from very tough districts in Pennsylvania that are going to be tough to win in 2026. And, you know, one of the things they've always told me, even when we were voting on the budget reconciliation package, is that they came here to cast tough votes to help fix the country and to turn, you know, the federal government around back to, you know, fiscal responsibility. And they said they're willing to cast those tough votes. And that's what impresses me, is that everybody in this freshman class takes this all very seriously. They realize that, you know, woke ideology has been ruining our country and that the fiscal irresponsibility of a previous administration is ruining the country. So having the opportunity to have President Trump as the leader and to know that he is leading. I mean, the fact that he's out there, I mean, eliminating the Department of Education. We've talked about that for years. I remember even under his first administration when he moved the embassy from Tel Aviv in Israel up to Jerusalem. Everybody's like, oh, you're going to start World War III. But he is a man of decision. He's a man of action. And I think that everybody respects that tremendously and wants to be supportive of where he wants to lead and explain to our voters back home why it's important to follow.
Absolutely. Well, I so appreciate you sharing your time and experience with the freshman GOP class for this year and also with the president in the Oval Office, because that gives me hope that, you know, hopefully we have a contingent in Washington that sees all of these things through the lens of first principles and will be willing to act on that. And hopefully we can build on a conservative majority into 2026. So Representative Stutzman, I know you have to run, but thank you so much for your time today. And all of our listeners should follow him on X and Instagram and Facebook, all of those platforms at Rep. Stutzman, so that you can be apprised of all of the great news and commentary and so forth that comes from his social media. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. As we celebrate the many pro-life victories going forward, we rejoice. Preborn's network of clinics have a unique opportunity to advance even further without political persecution. But what does this look like? Preborn is the greatest threat to the abortion industry by rescuing on average 200 babies' lives a day, and they are putting a serious dent into the abortion holocaust. But there are still thousands of babies who are slain daily, and Preborn's goal is to rescue them all. With the help of the pro-life community, meaning you and me, we can save so many more. Please join us in saving all of these precious lives. The ultrasound is the game changer. Once a mother hears that precious heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. If you consider yourself pro-life, we need your help. One ultrasound is just $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 sponsors ultrasounds for the entire Preborn network for an entire day. So how many lives can you save? Every child is a beautiful gift from God, so please join this cause. To donate securely, please dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And in case you didn't know, Disney's Snow White has flopped at the box office. And you may not have known because you may not have even been aware that there was this woke movie because nobody went and saw it. And it's absolutely amazing, I think, for the dying woke culture. And it's actually a good lesson for Disney, in my view. Disney should not have tried to make Snow White happen. There were so many controversies leading up to this, including the central figure and the actress that plays Snow White, Rachel Zegler is her name, and trying to make Snow White, the beloved original Disney princess, into this sort of feminist. And we're going to take away the "Someday My Prince Will Come" anthem, which was beloved by, you know, all princesses and princesses at heart since the original film in like something like the 1930s or 40s, and moving forward and making instead a sort of feminist anthem through this. And so what can we learn about woke going broke? Well, let's welcome in Andrew Klavan, who, beyond being one of my very dear friends, which is the most important thing, obviously, that you need to know about Drew, he hails from Hollywood, and that entire scene has the best show on The Daily Wire that you need to listen to, because instead of just political commentary, it's always rooted in philosophy and just a unique perspective that I find incredibly fascinating. So I'm so glad he joined us for this conversation. Drew, good morning, and thanks so much for joining.
Oh, it's great talking to you, Jenna.
Absolutely. So, so Snow White, your take on this whole debacle?
Well, it's actually kind of profound in a way. When you think about the source material, Snow White, obviously one of the Brothers Grimm fairy tales, and where do fairy tales come from? They come from moms. They come from mothers. And so this is some 19th century guys, two brothers in the 19th century, collecting from mostly women these tales that they told their kids at bedtime. And so what you're getting is, you know, there were women writers, of course, in the 19th century, but it was still a field dominated by men, and men's consciousness was certainly the dominant consciousness. So you're getting what moms thought of the world. These are ordinary people, people who are not famous, people who are just, you know, making up stories to tell their kids. And so you're getting something really precious and rare. And yeah, when Walt Disney turned these fairy tales into movies, he softened them. They were much harsher in the original. They were more sexualized in the original. And the Brothers Grimm, in fact, softened some of them when they were writing them. But essentially, the idea that you can't tell these stories because they're not woke, they're not right, they're not correct, is negating human nature as it was observed by moms, who happen to know more about human nature than any other group of people on the earth, because they form it, they shape it, they see it coming into being. And so you were really cutting off this wisdom about human beings, because you don't think the world is the way it should be, and you think you're the first generation to have discovered that life is unfair and unjust, and you are going to fix everything, which no one could do before, but now that you're here and your brilliance, you know, you're going to make everything right. So you think about, like, This movie hit every mine you could possibly hit. They stepped on every mine you could possibly hit. Rachel Zegler, who is a loudmouth and, you know, just an absolute kind of privileged, self-satisfied blowhard who can't keep her mouth shut. She's got this great part in a big movie, and she can't stop telling people that it's not going to be about the fact that women want to find a prince. It's not going to be about that. It's going to be about she's an independent leader, and she's going to do all this, and which immediately is like, no, I don't want to see that. Nobody immediately lost half the audience. And then it runs into the dwarf problem with Peter Dinklage saying, oh, we shouldn't be making entertainment out of dwarfs. And I want to say, to me, that was really interesting because I don't want to, you know, say that being a dwarf, I think, is an affliction, and it's probably been very difficult for Peter Dinklage. He's also the luckiest dwarf to have ever lived. He was born he's an actor at a time when the greatest romantic lead of the decade was a dwarf, and he got the part. And how much more interesting would it have been if he had said, yeah, you know, I really got stuck with this bad deal, and yet look how, you know, great my life has been. Maybe you can make something out of your life no matter what, you know, blocks you face. But instead, it's always the same. I'm a victim. I'm demanding my rights. So it's just like a sort of across-the-board anti-wisdom move by our society that now is reflected in Disney. And I think it should remind us, you know, artists, these people don't make up their own ideas. They're fools who take the ideas that are popular or impressed on the rest of us in the culture around them. And so if we live in a different way, if we are not afraid, if we speak up, if we say, no, marriage is a wonderful thing. You know, women should want to be married. They should want to be fruitful and multiply. They should want to be moms. You know, it's like you're not just a mom. You're not just a wife. You're actually one of the most important people in the culture. If we say those things loud enough and live those things out in our lives, you know, then they'll make movies for us instead. But instead, what happens is this absolute monopoly that the left has on entertainment media and news media has really been crippling. And I hope that this failure, this laughable, hilarious failure of the new Snow White will kind of teach them something. I kind of doubt it, but maybe it will, or maybe at least it'll inspire people with other ideas to start making movies as well.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Andrew Klavan from The Daily Wire and the host of The Andrew Klavan Show, and he has a brand new book out as well that we'll talk about in just a few minutes. But Drew, I agree with you completely on all of those fronts. I mean, the whole idea of leftism is the DEI, the feminists, rise of the feminists, the hatred of men to say that, you know, being a wife and a mom isn't something to aspire to be the perpetual victim. And, you know, somebody who I was talking to actually from church the other day about, you know, the whole LGBTQ movement. She said something really fascinating that I hadn't considered, where she said, you know, a lot of guys become gay because they just want to have sex like men, and they don't want to have to deal with women and, you know, the complications of a relationship. And so, you know, that or abuse. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons, but that's kind of a mainstream. But women become feminists and lesbian because they hate men. And I think there's kind of a profundity to that, right? And this is kind of what I see from this actress and the overall, well, we could get into it, and he perfectly explained all of the different controversies. To me, as a woman who loves princess culture, who grew up with Disney movies and having that kind of idealized, romanticized version of, you know, the fairy tales that aren't as dark as the Brothers Grimm, to have someone as, you know, the iconic Snow White, not even a new character, taken and made a feminist is to me, that's literally cultural appropriation. It's like you're trying to turn Snow White, who yearned for a prince, into a feminist. And the only reason for that is because they hate men. And Disney has to wake up to that. And I think the left needs to wake up to that. And so do you think that with this bombing so much, will Disney actually learn that lesson? I mean, will they say in PR and say, you know, we tried. We tried to give you the woke movie. You didn't buy it. And we're a corporation. We have a bottom line. So we're going to give families now what they consume because we're a for-profit company. I mean, do you think they'll be that wise to maybe even just go in that direction?
No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. I think they may soften things. They may keep a lower profile. They may tell some of their actors and actresses to keep their mouths shut a little bit. But this is one of the important things that the right, conservatives do not understand about Hollywood. They keep thinking, oh, Hollywood is all about the money. And I've heard this a million times. I worked in Hollywood. It's not all about the money. Artists work for love, and people work for prestige and love. And in Hollywood, you get prestige and love for parading around your leftist virtue. And if you want to win awards, and if you want to get to the film festivals, and if you want to be written about in the paper, you have to be a leftist. You have to put yourself forward as someone who cares about social justice and is going to change everything through your virtuous wokeness. And you're in a business where if you want to get an Oscar, if you want to get the girls, if you want to, get press. I mean, think about this. There are incredibly popular television shows, shows on television like Blue Bloods and NCIS that are kind of right wing. They're some of the most popular shows. They never get written about. Every time, and this is an observation my friend Ben Shapiro has made numerous times, every time there's a conservative character in a show, like in 30 Rock, where they had Alec Baldwin as a kind of conservative character, Parks and Rec, they have a conservative character. He becomes the hero, and they have to start portraying him as evil in order to make him unattractive to people because people identify with him. So it really is a question of prestige and love that is keeping Hollywood in this lane. And what could change, what should change, and what I hope we'll see change, is when conservatives start putting a little bit of money and effort into the arts themselves. Because, look, you can make a movie now that is really viable with a credit card. I mean, and as AI progresses and the video that AI is capable of making progresses, people will be able to make movies almost on their own. I mean, you won't even have to hire actors to do the voices. And once you start to see a more democratized entertainment media, once you start to see people like, on the right start to make entertainments and people start to flock to those entertainments, then things will change, because they're not going to change as long as they know that they can always make their money back with one movie or by selling it in Europe or by selling it to China. And so when you start to say, yeah, but people aren't talking about your movies, they're talking about our movies, that will make a change. And I don't see that really happening yet. The right is very, very slow to understand the culture. They brag about the facts. They'll say, like, oh, the Oscars, I haven't watched the Oscars in years. Yeah, who has? But still, that's a bad thing, not a good thing. We want a vital, vibrant, popular entertainment media, and woke has killed it. Woke has killed the movies. It has hurt TV, I think, streaming. I think streaming will come back a little more because there's more money in it. But still, if we don't actually produce things, if people with right-wing ideas don't produce things and don't, actually try to make good entertainment, I don't think there's enough motivation to make the left change.
That's a really great observation. And that, boiled down, is my big question about boycotts, for example. I mean, do you think that that Hollywood would have just arrived to this themselves, or did conservatives and Christians and good people in entertainment just leave and then leave it to the left to take over instead of fight for the arts and entertainment in a meaningful way?
Yeah, we didn't fight for it at all, and we didn't actually invest in it. I mean, the things that you need to make movies are, you don't just need money and movie studios and a slate. You can't just make a movie. You can't put 20 years into making, a Reagan biopic and think that that's going to change anything. No, you have to make movie after movie after movie, and so you have to write into budgets. You have to write into smaller budgets and all that stuff. But you also need awards. You need magazines that can knowledgeably review movies instead of some guy at a think tank writing an article about a movie. You need somebody who's an actual movie critic to review movies and novel too. Movies are not the only form of entertainment, but you need people not just expressing opinions, but knowledgeable opinions, which is what the left has created. They have an infrastructure to reward artists and to praise them when they do things that they like, right? If you get a review in the New York Times, that still resounds. New Yorker, that still has an effect. Whereas where have we got any kind of culture except for Christian Toto doing Hollywood and Toto, and good for him, but still, we need like a a dozen of those, and we need we have a think tank on every possible subject except the arts. We just don't get it. I've been banging this drum for 20 years, and it has changed a little bit. Now people give it lip service, but they still are not willing to plunk money down and do what needs to be done. And it's a big effort, you know, and show business is a really risky business, as I can tell you, having been in it all my life. You know, entertainment is a really risky business, but still, you know, it's something that needs to be done. And I think that we need to do better than just, you know, right-wing dribble and propaganda. That's not going to work. We have to tell great stories. We have to have great stories to tell. And they don't need to necessarily push conservative values in the sense that conservative art doesn't look like conservative life. You know, there's stories about evil and they're about sex and they're about all the things that people do. But underlying that should be a moral sense of, sense of the moral order, sense of God's presence in the world, a sense that, you know, we're not just living this random life where we can do anything we want and fix everything the way we want it to be. And if we start to make stories like that and we start to put money behind it and build an infrastructure to welcome it and reward it and praise it, it's a big job, but we're just very slow off the dime on this.
And you have, for as long as I've known you, which is, over a decade now, I think have been beating that drum. Yeah. And this is why I appreciate so much your perspective on the arts and entertainment, because I think a lot of conservatives generally don't see this as valuable as they should, and the opportunity that we have to be great storytellers. And, you hear that from some conservatives and some who say, oh, we want to be winsome, and some pastors and churches even saying, we need to be to tell better stories like the left do. And that's why they have the emotion. We can, as Ben Shapiro rightly says, facts don't care about your feelings, but feelings often don't care about your facts either. And so then there's kind of this conflict when people are so driven toward emotion that they fail to even consider facts. And so this is perhaps, part of your new book, I think, drives at this topic. It's called The Kingdom of Cain. And what you have as your banner on your X profile, which everyone should follow, Andrew Klavan there. And remember, there are no E's in Klavan. So you can find that there. I learned that from your show, by the way. That was the key thing I've learned over the years.
The most important lesson, yes, I think.
Absolutely. Yes, that one is beat into me every day when I listen to you. But The Kingdom of Cain is true crimes, great works of art, learning to see the light in the midst of darkness. This is fascinating.
Well, one of the things about Christian art is so much of it is very bad. And it's pleasing, it's family fair, and that's all fine. But it doesn't really get, when you think of the great Christian art, you think of, there's a lot of darkness in it. There's a lot of evil in it. There's, remember, our religion starts with a crucifixion. It is not a happy talk religion. It's a religion of pain and suffering and reality, It holds out hope of something greater than that, but that's what it represents in life. And so what I do in Kingdom of Cain, I've been a mystery writer all my life, a crime writer. I write about crimes. I write about low-down people. I write about evil and all this stuff. And so I took a couple of famous murders, three or four famous murders that have repeatedly appeared in movies and in novels and in even in philosophy, and discuss what it is that is revealed by the arts when they deal with evil. So just as an example, Ed Gein was a murderer in Wisconsin of the 1950s in a farm, farming town. And he killed some women, and he actually dug some women up. And he used their bodies as a female suit. He wore their bodies as a female suit because he wanted to be a transgender person. He wanted to be a woman. And that inspired a guy named Robert Bloch to write a novel called Psycho, which obviously became one of the great motion pictures by Alfred Hitchcock. And from Psycho came an entire spate of movies. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre was based on the Ed Gein murders. Silence of the Lambs was based on the Ed Gein murders. And out of those movies came the slasher genre, which is full of junk, but also full of some actually pretty good movies like Halloween. And so I just follow those things. I don't get too grim about it. I don't want to go into the horrible details of every murder. I just want to show you that the sexuality that has come out in the transgender movement was inherent in some of those ideas, and they are and revealed in some of those movies in ways that actually fit in with the moral order. Not that, you know, transgenderism is moral, but it, what it is fighting against in the moral order. And a lot of beautiful things are revealed in very difficult, frightening stories. And, you know, I've gotten this all my life. Why do you, you know, you call yourself a Christian and then you write stories about murder and gangsters and all this stuff. And I always say, yeah, because that, those are the interesting stories. You know, Macbeth is an interesting story. Silence of the Lambs is an interesting story. A story about, you believe in Jesus and everything goes great is not only not interesting, it's not real. And when people find out that it's not real, they lose their faith. And when you, and yet, when you go into very dark stories and come out with a moral vision, you start to think, ah, I get it. This world is very ugly. This world is full of evil. And yet it is part of a greater moral vision. And so I think that it actually restores faith to talk about these things. And so it's again, it's a story about true crimes, famous crimes that just keep being made again and again and again in movies. And why? Why are they so fascinating? And what do they reveal about the moral order and the light of God, you know, because remember, when we're told to rejoice evermore, we're not told to rejoice evermore at Disneyland. We're told to rejoice evermore in this world, which is a very difficult world full of evil. And that's kind of what the under theme of the book is how do we rejoice in a world of evil? And I think the arts can teach us about that.
And that's so well said, and that echoes, Drew Klavan, what my pastor was actually teaching about just a couple of weeks ago, how he was saying that often Christians who have grown up in the faith think, well, you know, I don't have this amazing testimony, this kind of like one of those captivating stories that you're describing of, you know, I was at the bottom and I was, you know, God saved me in this, you know, third act. And it's this kind of gripping Hollywood drama. And he said, but for my own children, their story is that the Christian life works. And yes, trials and tribulations will come. The storms will come, but their testimony will be, I never had to reach the bottom because I am so firm in the faith, and that the Christian life works when life is hard and difficult and sinful, because until Christ returns or calls us home, we will deal with an evil and sinful world, and we have to understand that higher calling and purpose on our life, which is ultimately only found in the truth of the gospel of Christ. So the book is The Kingdom of Cain, and it is coming May 6, 2025, but you can pre-order now on Amazon and I'm sure other places. But Drew, we have to take a break here, and I could talk to you about this for a long time, so we'll have to have you on the podcast to do a deeper dive into arts and entertainment and perhaps your book soon. But thank you so much for your perspective and for always keeping the light of the truth of the gospel at the fore in all of your conversations, and really appreciate your time today. Thanks.
Always good to talk to you, Jenna. Thanks.
Thanks so much, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, Mike Huckabee vows to carry out Trump's Israel policies in protest-ridden confirmation hearing. This is the headline from All Israel News with respect to the former Arkansas governor's hearing yesterday in front of the Senate as President Donald Trump's nominee for ambassador to Israel. So really, what is the controversy over this and how should Christians respond? Joining me now is my very dear friend, Pastor Jack Hibbs from Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. So Pastor Jack, I think this is an important confirmation, an important nominee, and I fully support Governor Huckabee, but it was really interesting to see how the left in yesterday's hearing was just, I think, trying to throw shade wherever they could and in a way that didn't really land or stick. But what do you make of this whole controversy and where Christians should be viewing the United States' relations with Israel?
Jenna, first of all, thanks for having me. I have got to just use one word to get us started, and that is exposure. I think that's what's going on. I don't think we can deny it, and it's beautiful. Exposure. What do I mean by that? Who's upset with President Trump's appointment of Mike Huckabee? You can know a lot about someone by who hates them. And so you look at the entire Democrat Party. This cannot happen in their worldview. Mike Huckabee loves Jesus too much, loves the Bible, and is concerned for Israel. the Council for American Islamic Relations. Huckabee cannot be confirmed. This is unacceptable because he loves Israel and he loves the Bible. Look at the Muslim Brotherhood. They're furious right now, Jenna, over the thought of Mike Huckabee being the ambassador to Israel. You go down that list, and you can know a lot about somebody by whose enemies they have surrounding them. And Huckabee is despised by those who detest the Bible. They can't stand Israel. And this is very telling, Jenna, because it's exposing the fact that, number one, Trump has literally appointed the most Bible-believing, born-again, Christ-worshipping, loving, Israel-loving ambassador that this nation has ever seen, ever. And so that just can't go by the woke, anti-Semitic group without a protest. And so we're going to hear more of it, Jenna. We're going to see all this. Can I say it this way so early in the morning? We're going to see all this pus and decay and rot rise to the top and being displayed on our TV screens. And just know this. These people are being exposed, much like those who regarding Doge are freaking out. You know, there's something wrong if you are very, very upset because an ambassador to Israel loves Israel, for crying out loud. Mike Huckabee does not represent the Palestinians. He doesn't represent the Canadians. He's not representing the Peruvians. He's to go and represent the United States to Israel, and he's a perfect fit.
So well said on exposure. And one of the things that I so appreciate about this whole era of Trump in politics is that, you know, for everything else that anyone could legitimately criticize, he is forcing people and politicians, and especially the swamp, to stand and declare what they really think. They can't hide behind a lot of their former rhetoric and some of these other kind of special interests or just other things that they try to object to. It is all being exposed, and it's a great thing for those of us who love the biblical worldview, who love truth, because we're seeing in real time where Washington actually stands with respect to Israel and a lot of these other issues that we should have a biblical perspective on. And so, you know, one of the things that was both an undertone and I think an overtone in yesterday's hearing was how much he is a Christian. And the left has for far too long said, oh, but separation of church and state, you have to leave your faith at the door. How dare you impose your values on us? Meanwhile, they're imposing their beliefs, their religion of woke, their ideologies, all of their views on us, and they want to codify it. And so finally, I think, maybe we're pushing back in some good ways.
Well, listen, you hit the nail on the head. Here's the funny thing, and I hope all of your listeners get this. Isn't it interesting that when 50 protesters for, say, Palestinian issues or Muslim issues show up, boy, all the cameras are there and it gets national or international news. And then there's that silent majority that was referred to decades ago that if they show up en masse, it's barely covered at all. And why am I bringing this up? California is a great example. What's happening in California is that good people are getting engaged and involved. And what's happening is we're speaking up for what is righteous, for what is good and virtuous. It's not popular to carry that on the mainstream media, but the groundswell of common sense in California is soon going to be seen by the nation and the world. Translate that into what's going on with Governor Huckabee. The fact that he is the right man for the job sends the message to the woke ideology, the pro-Muslim group, anti-Israel group. We cannot have this. We can't have this happen because our march, our movement, is to Islamicize America. I forget, Jenna, there's a town in New Jersey that just became a total Muslim city council. And they quickly implemented parts of Sharia law in New Jersey. Listen, if they have the chance, they're going to do what their religious worldview is. But if we stand up in our own nation a nation founded upon Judeo-Christian worldview values, they throw a fit. Frankly, they're in the wrong country. They need to move to Pakistan. They need to move to Saudi Arabia. America is not the country that a Muslim who wants to have a Sharia law Islamic nation, this is the wrong country. And all of this, it's not just about Huckabee. It's them being passionate enough for their worldview to expose themselves that we cannot stand to acknowledge the nation of Israel. Because if anybody knows Islam, Israel cannot exist if Islam is going to advance. This is fundamental Islamic apologetic that Israel must be destroyed. And frankly, what's happening in America right now is a beautiful reformation in our politics. But I pray, Jenna, I know you do too, we need to see a revival among the church to understand, wait a minute, America is a nation founded upon the scriptures, because we read our pilgrim fathers, we read our founding fathers, and they used the Bible for the argument to come here and create a nation under God. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. And you have been educating people and encouraging them in that view even longer than I have. And this is exactly why 10 years ago, now I can't believe it's been that long, I wrote my book, The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution, to provide passionate patriots with the mm-hmm. tools and the arguments that they need for exactly that, because we have been sold a bill of goods, and we have, unfortunately, we the church largely have bought into the separation of church and state and this whole idea that politics is morally neutral or apolitical, and that somehow we have to leave our faith at the door and we can't advocate for a Judeo-Christian founding, or it doesn't apply today, or it's social contract theory, and we can all collectively determine now in 2025 what we want the difference between right and wrong to be. I mean, all of those lies. And if we would just understand, Pastor Jack, that our Constitution requires a moral,
that's right,
biblical basis, and that our leaders in every government office, from the White House all the way down to dog catcher, actually requires a biblical worldview ethic in order to be legitimate, and the only interpretation of our Constitution must conform with biblical morality, then we are starting off the argument from a much stronger position, because it's not, should you believe in the Bible? It's, this is the way that our country was founded. And if you want to have an amoral society, you're right. Then go to Pakistan, go elsewhere. But in America, we recognize that our rights are pre-political. They come from God, our creator. And the sole purpose of government is to preserve and protect those rights that come from him in conformance and respect to and recognition of natural law. But for too long, Christians have conceded all of this. And then we're arguing, and it's like we have to evangelize first, and first you have to believe in God before you believe in the laws of nature. That's absurd. That's like saying first you have to become a scientist in order to believe in gravity.
Well, Jenna, first of all, if people out there right now listening have not read your book, they've got to read your book, because you just tore a couple of pages right out of your book and said it perfectly well. Here's the deal. I want to say this. Why? Why is there a prevailing view among the status quo? You got to have a separation of church and state. Pastors can't speak up and Christians shouldn't vote. Why does this happen? Answer, because pastors have failed to recognize the religious spiritual founding of America. If they just studied the great Puritan preachers, if they listen to Jonathan Edwards, if they would read their writings, their sermons are available. I own hundreds of them. If these pastors would just do that, they would find out, oh my gosh, I'm in a country where I am not only have the freedom to preach and to teach the Bible, but I'm also called upon to be the moral conscience, the trumpet to the leadership of this nation. Every pastor in every town, hamlet, and city is to be ordained by God to hold the authorities accountable to God in this republic. It's what made American exceptionalism what it is. When you go back to our nation's founding, from Massachusetts, from Plymouth onward, everything was about the church being the epicenter of the conscience of the community. And from that came the liberation of the blacks, the fight for liberties and freedoms, to break yoke with the King of England, to establish our own government under God. No other nation has ever embarked upon that experiment but America. So, Jenna, bottom line, I hold pastors responsible for allowing their congregations to entertain this wrong narrative that we've got to be silent, we shouldn't get involved, we shouldn't stand up for righteousness, we should just show up on Sunday and pay our tithes and then go be silent for 6 days of the week. No way. That is not Christianity. We are to shine the light of the gospel everywhere.
Amen and amen. Let's have the church be the epicenter of culture again. Make church great again. That's what we're doing, Pastor Jack. Thanks so much. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at afr.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.